Lakers. Mike Malloy here. On the Mike Malloy program, thanks to Brad Friedman, who sat in this past week while Kathy and I took some time off. Thank you very much, Brad. I understand he had, Obama on. He had an interview with Vlad Putin. How does he do that? How does Friedman manage to have programs like that? And all I do is sit here and bitch. I don't know how he does it. Thanks, Brad. So I find out that the Montana Republican Party had their convention this past weekend. And Republicans are either, or possibly both, the most evil, ignorant sons of bitches in America ever. Or they really do want to do harm to Obama, President Obama, and First Lady Michelle. It's one or the other. I guess it's a third possibility, that they are so developmentally stalled at around ninth grade. I'm talking about right-wingers, Republicans, conservatives, all y'all, that what they consider to be fun is what they did at the Montana State Republican Party Convention. You hear about this? They had some half-wit had a trailer that he was towing behind a pickup truck, and on the trailer was a bullet-riddled outhouse labeled Obama Presidential Library. Now, this United States of America, in the year of our Lord, 2012, these are Republicans. This is in Montana. Is this what you people in Montana, is this all you have to do, you Republicans? This kind of juvenile dumbassery? I mean, it's astonishing. So there's this fake outhouse, and it says Obama Presidential Library stenciled across the side of it. And inside was a fake birth certificate. And then, to show you what I mean about the developmentally stalled little piglets, there was graffiti inside this crapper that read, "For a good time," and then a reference to Michelle Obama. The newspaper in Missoula, Montana, reports the display also contained another "For a good time" reference to Secretary of State Hillary Clinton and Nancy Pelosi. The display, painted to look as if it had numerous bullet holes, was parked outside Missoula, Montana's Hilton Garden Inn, where the convention goers all stayed. Oh, the convention also included a raffle for a 12-gauge shotgun, a shovel, and duct tape. Now, this is a reference, since we don't live in Montana with all these retarded sons of bitches, this is in reference to shoot, shovel, and shut up. Now, that is something going on someplace in some particular right-wing corner of hell that involves the illegal killing of wolves or federally protected species such as grizzly bears. The newspaper reported that the convention goers burst into laughter at the raffle reference. Oh, and the keynote speaker on Saturday was the enormous pig freak himself, Newt Gingrich. There he was, keynote speaker. He said if he won the raffle, he'd give the prize to his 10-year-old grandson. You ought to do that, Newt. Maybe the little tyke will shoot your goddamn head off. What do you think, Newt? Ah, you think there's a possibility? Bam! Woo! It's unclear who brought the outhouse display. Well, they're just good Christian, American-loving Republican conservatives, making reference to the Negro in the White House and his wife. It's amazing to me they haven't asked to see Barack and Michelle's wedding certificate. Because, you know, black people don't really get married. They jump over a broom. That's their wedding. Ask any right winger. Ask Newt. God. The state Republican Party chairman, Will Deschamps, or however he pronounces his names, I'm sure he doesn't pronounce it the French way, he dismissed the outhouse as what he called a sideshow. And he said he didn't know who brought it to the convention. I don't know. He said, it's not something I'm going to agonize over. Some of that stuff is, get this, some of that stuff is not real good taste. Some of that stuff is not real. What does that mean? What does that mean, you halfwit, that part of it is good taste or all of it is taste? Tasteful? Oh, my God. I would imagine that the best way to handle any Republican convention is to, I don't know, can you hire a bunch of, not hire, but rent from somebody, a bunch of skunks, you know, animals, skunks, whole bunch of them, and maybe 50 or 60 or 100, and put them in bags, and shake the bags up, right, you know. And then somehow get them inside wherever they're having these Republican circle jerks and untie the bags and let all these skunks run loose. Any way to do that? I can think of some better things to do, but I don't want to lose my broadcast license. You got to love these Catholic nuns. I'm serious. Not the priests, not the pope, not the cardinals, not the dukes, not the pointy-headed freaks, not the pedophiles, none of those people. But a group of Catholic nuns has kicked off a 9-state bus tour across the Midwest. It began this morning in an effort to highlight the cuts to safety net programs contained in the House Republican budget, the one authorized by this freakish Paul Ryan in Wisconsin, right? Now, Paul Ryan claims to be a Catholic. The bus tour began this morning in Iowa and includes a Tuesday stop in Ryan's Wisconsin district. This is according to Think Progress. Along the tour, the nuns will stop at food pantries, shelters, schools, hospitals. Kind of like what Jesus would do when you get right down to it. Not Catholic priests. Not some scum sucker like Ryan. Not some freak like the Montana Republican Party. No. But like Jesus would do. Jesus Christus, you know, the real deal. Jesus. That's what he would do. He would stop at food pantries, shelters, schools, and hospitals. He said he would. He did. It's there in the Bible. Anyway, the nuns will also visit the offices of 10 Republicans who voted for this Nazi budget, including Ryan and Speaker John Boehner. Who is also a really devout Catholic. The purpose is to draw attention to the work the nuns have done on behalf of poor Americans and the devastating impact the Republican cuts will have on those who rely on these safety net programs. Sister Simone Campbell, executive director of Network, which is a liberal social justice lobby in Washington. You never hear of a conservative social justice lobby, do you? Of course not. The only time they had something like that was in run by the Nazis, and they were called extermination camps. But this is a liberal social justice lobby in Washington, and Sister Simone Campbell says, quote, "We're doing this because these are life issues. And by lifting up the work of Catholic sisters, we will demonstrate the very programs and services that will be decimated by the House budget." End quote. Now, let's see where the Nazi Pope weighs in on this, huh? Come on, Mr. Pope, what do you say? You got a bunch of out-of-control nuns over here in the United States of America. They're going around to food pantries and shelters and hospitals. You better put a stop to it, Pope.
Mike Malloy Show. All substance, no abuse.
21 past the hour. So you gotta love these Catholic nuns. Let's see, what is their order? Well, they have this, it's called Network, a liberal social justice lobby in Washington. And they're going to do the bus tour to try to highlight the consequences of some of these right-wing neo-fascist cuts that the right-wing neo-fascist Republican Party hopes to put into place, budget cuts. And they're going to be visiting places like shelters, schools, food pantries, hospitals. And again, let me reiterate, that is exactly what Jesus told his followers to do. And he said, he made it very clear, how you treat those people is how you treat me, and I will take note. There are going to be so many Christians in hell, just frying and burning and roasting, you know that, in the hell that they created, of course. There will be more Christians in hell than sinners. Are you aware of that? Because if there's one thing I think that their Redeemer made abundantly clear, was that he hated hypocrisy. So, Boner and Ryan and the rest of you swine, prepare yourself. And as you know, the Republican budget would cut millions out of food assistance, other programs. 62% of the spending cuts that these Republican pigs are talking about would come from safety net programs. 62%. Now, Ryan, according to Think Progress, Ryan attempted to use his Catholic faith to justify the cuts when the budget was released. And he got a strong rebuke from religious leaders across the country. The U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops paused for a moment from their pedophile activities and called the cuts unjustified and wrong, and sent letters to congressional committees urging them to oppose these measures. They got no response, so the Conference of Catholic Bishops went back, busily getting to work, figuring out how to continue to hide all the pederasty. Is that how you say it? All the pedophilic activity that they've been involved in for, 12, 13 centuries. Now, the nuns' bus tour is taking this issue a step further. It's been mere weeks, remember, since the Vatican called on American nuns to stop talking about economic justice issues. What are you doing? You're supposed to be working to get rid of that Muslim out of the White House. You know that, right? And Pope Crazy ordered them to focus on real church stuff, like gay marriage and, no condoms and, the stuff that Jesus was really, really concerned about. The nuns have asked some of the bishops to join the tour, but so far, wait for it, have not received a response. Can you imagine a Catholic bishop getting on the bus tour? Get on the bus, bro. Come on, huh? Come on. Ride with the Sisters of Jesus. Do what you're supposed to do. Come on. Come on, one of you bishop freaks. Come on. The nine-state tour includes Iowa, Wisconsin, Michigan, Indiana, Illinois, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Maryland, and Virginia, before ending July 2nd in Washington, D.C., 2 days before just an absolute blood-red orgy of faux American patriotism will erupt across this country yet again, right? Huh? Yet again. And the Republicans, the right-wingers, will make it very clear once again how important it is to wave your flags and shoot off your firecrackers and get all dewy-eyed and teary-eyed about our fallen heroes, right? Of course, when it comes to doing anything to help the families of our fallen heroes or the ones coming back with half their heads shot away, that's different! We're not supposed to do that. They're supposed to be dead. It is so much easier to decorate graves on the 4th of July than it is to deal with the fact that military suicides are now off the chart. No. Don't pay attention to that. Don't pay attention to those nuns. Just shoot off your goddamn fireworks, wave your flags, and go put pansies on the grave sites. That's a good thing, right? But as far as helping soldiers, helping their families, oh, please. Well, you know, the only good soldier, ask any Republican, the only good soldier is a dead soldier. The only good soldier to a right winger is a dead one. So they can get on their motorcycles and broom, 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 escort the coffin to the gravesite. And everybody can go all dewy-eyed. And the Republicans stand in the background saying, yes, goddammit, good man, you died. I'm just to the left of the Christian right. I've got a large cross. Do you have a light? We're all compassionate. Myself is my friend. The last thing I want to do is tax and spend. Guns are great. They make us all safe. Except, of course, for the high death rate. Abortion's wrong. Capital punishment's right.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. Again, thanks to Brad Friedman, who substituted last week while we were out and about. Appreciate it very much, Brad. From Dr. Saxman, who plays music with the Count Basie Orchestra and finds time to email us every once in a while. He writes under the subject line, AGG. Is that, how do you pronounce that? A-G-G-G-G-H-H-H-H-H. I guess it's AGG. Dr. Saxman writes, man, I've been missing your rants and anger. We don't always agree, but the last weeks are surreal. And I need to hear you yell about it. Then I had some dental surgery that developed a complication. I have been able to practice in 2 weeks. Doesn't help my mood. And my mind spins from the racism toward Obama. Interrupting him in the Rose Garden, folks on TV still say, well, I know this has now happened 17 times, but it's not racism. And, of course, the lies that spew out of the minister's mouth make my head spin around like The Exorcist. My sister was out in South Dakota. She was talking about just the utter dislike of President Obama that you meet in those places. I'm afraid I haven't been feeling very hopeful about the whole thing. Welcome back, bro. Thanks, Doc. Yeah, I can't get over that thing in Montana. What is wrong with you people? I mean, seriously, if you want to be a Republican, be a Republican. Do you have to salt and pepper your jerky with racism and gutter references to the First Lady of the United States? Do you have to do that, you rancid sons of bitches? Is that fun for you? I mean, there are a million things to disagree with Barack Obama's policies. But you right-wingers are too stupid to do it. You don't have the sense that your Redeemer gave a sack full of BBs. You truly don't. Okay. So why make nasty men's room scribbles on the wall references to the First Lady of the United States, who has more class in her left toenail than you right-wing men have in your entire goddamn bodies? I mean, y'all make me sick. You just make me sick. But you're too stupid to go after political people based on their politics. You don't have a clue. So drag that old outhouse out there. Barack Obama Presidential Library. Goddamn, I'm funny. Aren't I funny? Hey, look at me. Yeah. I mean, I expect that in Alabama or here in Georgia or Mississippi or South Carolina. But come on, Montana, I thought it was big sky country. I thought y'all, you know, where the deer and the antelope play. That is until y'all got rid of them with your contracts for fracking, right? And oil drilling holes and deep pit spits and blah, 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 blah. You people make me sick. I don't care how long I'm in talk radio. You people just make me sick. Making that kind of reference to a woman who is the mom of two little girls. I mean, I just couldn't get my mind around that. Just couldn't get my mind around it. You are some filthy pigs. You really are. You're some filthy, racist, right-wing pigs. And like I said, I've said it before, I'll say it again, there are going to be more of you Christians roasting for eternity in your particular little hells than there are sinners on earth. Y'all are condemning yourselves every time you open your putrid mouths. You really are. Oh, well, like I care. Like I give a damn about your heaven and your hell. Rodney King is dead. Remember that? It just seems so long ago. So long ago. He was 25 years old, out on parole for a robbery conviction when he led police on a high-speed chase in March 1991. They finally cornered him on a dark street in L.A. Four L.A. police officers beat him more than 50 times with their nightsticks. They kicked him. They shot him with stun guns. He had 11 skull fractures, a broken eye socket, facial nerve damage. And you remember the videotape captured by a nearby resident who gave it to a TV station, and it was played over and over for the following year. This is before there was no YouTube. This is 1991. And then a year later, when these four Caucasian pigs were acquitted after they moved the trial out of L.A. and into a white racist suburb of Los Angeles, where they knew that, like in the old South, ain't no jury around here gonna convict four upstanding white men of beating a goddamn Negro. And they were right. They were found not guilty. And in April of 1992, Los Angeles almost collapsed. 3 days, 55 people killed, 2,000 injured, $1 billion in damage back when $1 billion was real money. Al Sharpton said yesterday, quote, through all that he had gone through with his beating and his personal demons, he was never one not to call for reconciliation and for people to overcome and forgive. History will record that it was Rodney King's beating and his actions that made America deal with the excessive misconduct of law enforcement. And he had autobiography out. He wrote autobiography. He described his uneasy feelings about the events in his life. He wrote, quote, for many years, I felt that I had been involuntarily burdened as the victim and the resultant universal symbol of police brutality. I wanted no part of it. I just wanted to stay home, drink, and watch TV. The fact that this footage was sent out to be viewed by an entire world certainly didn't help my recovery. We may be scarred, he wrote, and we may not be able to forget, but we can keep on going one step at a time until we get to a better place. End quote. Rodney King And the void that we all stepped into is obviously the better place that Rodney King was referencing, you think? Isn't it, it's always, you ever notice this historically in this country? It's been the black victims of violence that call for reconciliation. You ever notice that? It's not the Caucasians that call for it. Why is that? Unless I got it wrong, but I, you know, having lived in the South for 40 years, having, you know, gotten up front, up close and personal with all sorts of this craziness, with knowing John Lewis as a personal friend and two boys in the King family, and sitting with my Caucasian mouth shut and listening for the past 30 years. So that's the thing about white folks. If they do sit down and talk to black people, they want to say, well, now, instead of just shut the hell up and listen. I'm going to tell you, if you are a Caucasian and you know some black folk, if you could ever get yourself to the point where you invite a black guy over, and just sit down, get out some beers and sit down, have a few drinks, kick back, relax, throw a couple of shrimp on the Barbie or whatever you want to do, and then just shut up, white person, and listen. You know, ask a question and then listen. It's so simple. Just listen. You'd be amazed. Now, that doesn't happen here in the South. But it just doesn't. It doesn't happen in the South. Not, you know, not the way I'm talking about it. And I know a few white people. I do. I don't condemn all whites. Just about 98% of them. Because y'all won't shut the hell up and just listen. White people think they know everything. We do. We think that we know everything. I have all the answers. Well, we really don't. We have very few of the answers. But it was Rodney King that was calling for, can't we all get along? Reconciliation. John Lewis, who was almost goddamn killed, how many times? Hosea Williams is another one I knew. Hosea's dead now. But these folks, these civil rights warriors, I mean, people, and I knew some white ones too. I did. I knew some white ones too. But it's always the black folk who are calling for reconciliation. Let's make peace. Look, you just fractured my skull in 18 places, but you know what? Let's sit down and make peace. What? Let's sit down and make peace. What you talking about, boy? You know what I'm talking about.
Just had another cup of coffee. Here's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. Now, I know it's not church night, and we've already talked about the nuns who are doing what Jesus told them to do, not what the Republicans or this insane Pope tells them to do, but what Jesus told them to do. Now, I get this article about, get this, less than a week after Pennsylvania farmers called for a moratorium on fracking, a large gathering of Pennsylvania Lutherans has also formally passed a resolution calling for a statewide halt on shale gas drilling, which is fracking. The Upper Susquehanna Synod, this particular synod of Lutherans, passed three resolutions, it says here, regarding horizontal slick water hydraulic fracturing. The one resolution called for the synod to establish a task force to undertake a comprehensive assessment of the justice issues surrounding the natural gas industry. These justice issues include ecological protection from Christians, public health endangerment, and impacts on local communities such as housing, school districts, forced pooling, crime, violence against women, and exploitation of rural and impoverished families. Christians are doing this? I may have to change my attitude about some of them. What? The second resolution takes a public stance on the issue, calling for a statewide moratorium on fracking. No more permits. Stop it, stop it, stop it. The Reverend Leah Shade, pastor of United in Christ Lutheran Church in Union County, PA, one of the primary authors of the document, stated that she was both surprised and encouraged by the assembly's votes. She wrote, "There's a wide range of stances on this issue within the Lutheran Church. Some are benefiting financially from the industry, but many are concerned about the safety of human health and God's creation." What? "I am very proud to be a member of a church," she continues, "a church body that has so courageously exercised its role in public theology, making sure that Lutherans claim a voice on this highly controversial issue." And then the Reverend Ted Cockley, chaplain at Buffalo Valley Lutheran Village and another author of the document, spoke about the need for people of faith to speak up about the moral and ethical questions surrounding fracking. And he said this, quote, "Just as Jesus has commanded us to take care of the least of these among us," oh my goodness, "we have a responsibility to advocate for those most vulnerable who are suffering because of this industry," end quote. I'm stunned. I am speechless. I don't know what to say. Christians who are actually following the admonitions of Jesus? This cannot be! Come on, Lutherans! Get to the real issues! Gay marriage! Woo! I don't know. First, it's a bunch of nuns on a bus tour in protest of the Republican murder of this country. That's what they're doing. They're murdering it. The right-wingers, the Republicans, right-wing, Republican, they're all the same now. And the nuns are saying, no, you know, you shouldn't be doing this. Remember what Jesus said? And now Lutherans? I'm kind of surprised about the Lutherans because they're pretty conservative denomination, aren't they, huh, Lutherans? Of course, I've always thought that conservative meant conserve, but silly me, you know, conservative doesn't mean conserve. Conservative means exploit the hell out of anything you can get your hands on. Well, good for you, Christians. You Christians who are doing this, I mean, you know, you are in a massive minority. Most Christians are like John Boehner and John Kasich and Paul Ryan and, you know, those kind of Christians. Newt Gingrich. The kind of Christians that say, to hell with the poor, to hell with the sick, to hell with the homeless, to hell with the hungry, to hell with the naked. Unless it's one of my girlfriends, as Newt would say, oh, that was different. That's what most of these Christians, that's what modern Christians said. Hell with that. God wants you to make a lot of money. Prosperity theology. That's what we're about. We're talking about money church. We're talking about God's going to show he loves you by increasing your 401k. That's what our God's all about. What is this about? Healing the sick, feeding the hungry. What are you talking about? What are you talking about? So anyway, not to belabor the point, but good on this group of Catholic nuns and good on the Susquehanna River Basin Synod of the Lutheran Church for demonstrating that it is still possible for Christians, few and far between, but it's still possible to take the words of their ancient rabbi seriously when he gave his three or four sermons. I mean, it wasn't that much. I mean, he kept it simple. Because I think Jesus understood that down through the centuries he's going to be dealing with people like Paul Ryan and Newt Gingrich. He was going to be dealing with hypocrisy on a level that is just incalculable. So he kept it simple. Love your enemies. Feed the hungry. Visit the poor in prison and, you know, just do good. Treat your neighbor like yourself. But that's not what modern Christians are about. They're about gimme, gimme, gimme. Gimme, gimme, gimme. And goddamn those poor people and those queers and you know, Obama and the rest of them. Amazing stuff. We'll be back. Stay with us. Listening to. Every time a right winger stumbles onto this program, he just wets himself and then tries to come up with something really nasty to say in an email. You guys are funny. You really are. Regarding the horror in LA in 1992, Tim from LA writes, Mike, I was playing reporter for my college paper during the 1992 uprising, and I saw the anger. I also felt the anger when the bullets went whizzing past my head. Four officers were eventually convicted in federal court for violating King's civil rights. Yet one question I could never get an answer to is, why were four officers, three white and one Hispanic, in the limelight while the command staff skirted their responsibility? What was their responsibility? Training the officers to do what they did. If what they did was wrong, then the memorandum of understanding and training was the responsibility of the city of L.A. and the command staff. Even in Simi Valley, where the trial took place, Sergeant Frederick Nichols said that the four officers violated use of force policies. But when countered by the defense attorney, former Sergeant Daryl Munger, the prosecution witness was caught in a lie. Yet even with all that, neither former Chief Daryl Gates nor the command staff nor even the city hall were held accountable. One thing I noticed was in the lower ranking folks who end up, it's the lower ranking folks who end up being the political fodder for the powerful. Oh, and that's why the city settled with King for $3 million and not the $6 million, because once they were done with him politically, he was just another tissue paper being disposed of by the LAPD command staff and City Hall, as it is today. Now that the chief answers to the mayor, who answers to the banksters, and not the people. Tim from L.A. who writes for InsideOutNews.org. Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, has weighed in. In 1814, we took a little trip along with Arnold Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. That's his subject line. He writes, the cradle of democracy held an election Sunday. The people lost and the banks won. So much for democracy. Even the corporate media here in the U.S., while hailing this as a great victory, admitted it didn't fix any of Greece's underlying economic problems. Spain, which in terms of unemployment and deflation of asset values is in even worse shape than Greece, had its bond rates jump sharply. What is the Spanish word for Armageddon? Another big winner in the Greek elections was the Nazi Party. Not people we would call Nazis, but people who are proud to call themselves Nazis. Physical attacks against women and Communist Party members seemed to be the trademark of this ghost of Hitler's past. What is that? That's the New Dawn Party? Not mentioned in the corporate media were the elections in France, where socialists swept to control of both legislative bodies. They recently took the presidency and now control the second largest country in Europe. Their agenda? Undo all of the measures of austerity that have been killing the economy. Among other things, they will raise the minimum wage. U.S. Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. is introducing a bill in Congress to raise the minimum wage here to $10 an hour. This is only $3 less than it was in 1938 when you adjust for inflation. $10 an hour is $3 less than it was in 1938. Oh, Jesus. When in the midst of the last Republican Great Depression, it was set at 25 cents an hour. You didn't hear about that on the corporate media either. Banking god Jamie Dimon appeared before Congress last week to explain how it was okay for a government-issued insured bank to lose $5 billion betting against the euro. Actually, they don't even admit any of those things. And it could really be much worse. Republicans lined up to kiss his ring like a bunch of pedophile priests seeking a cover-up. I mean, absolution. From the Pope. Pope Dimon might not save their souls, but he's their biggest campaign donor and their best hope for a multi-million dollar retirement package. Obama hit Mitt hard with a change of policy covering young undocumented immigrants. It took the wind out of a proposed Rubio vice president bid based on a Romney version of the DREAM Act. Romney is on tape promising to veto the DREAM Act that Democrats have been trying to pass for more than a decade. The Republicans are screaming about Obama's unconstitutional executive order. It's none of those things, of course. The executive branch has wide authority to decide who gets to stay in the country based on the expected benefit to the nation. The only people eligible for this program, by the way, are either working on a four-year college degree without government aid or who are honorably discharged from the U.S. military. Ooh, how subversive is that, truth seekers, huh? Far better potential citizens than the trailer trash that vote Republican. This is, of course, Obama making another decisive chess move while Romney continues to toss nickels against the curb. Have you noticed the Republican prediction of $8 a gallon gas by mid-June is not getting much attention these days? Maybe because gas is under $3 a gallon in many states and falling. The commercials about Obama destroying the economy by not approving the Keystone Pipeline just don't seem to have that much punch anymore. Oh, and on this day in history, the United States declared war on the British Empire. Supposedly, it was over the bullying of American ships at sea that the British boarded at will. But Canada had done nothing about this for years. It had everything to do with right-wing dreams of conquering Canada while Britain was busy losing the Napoleonic Wars. That didn't exactly work out. The U.S. might still have gotten away with it, except that state militias refused to cross the border into Canada. The only actual American victory was engineered by liberal icon Andrew Jackson in the Battle of New Orleans, 2 weeks after a peace treaty was signed. We got a national anthem and a cute country western song by Johnny Horton out of it. We didn't really learn much otherwise. In 1814, we took a little trip along Colonel Jackson down the mighty Mississippi. See, the thing at prairie2.com, see, the thing about Bruce Enberg's missives here, his writing, you usually don't get the connection between the subject line and what he's writing about until the very end. That's really cool. That is so literary. Thanks, Bruce. All right, what else we got here? Oh, yeah, did you hear about this? Greta Hawkins is a principal in Brooklyn, New York, PS 90 in Brooklyn. And all of a sudden, yes, indeed, this happened last week, all of a sudden she's getting all sorts of racist hate mail. And death threats, and, you know, they're going to burn her at the stake, and she's an N-word, and her mama and her dad, you know, all of it. What she did to get out of this, she banned the Lee Greenwood song, God Bless the USA. She banned it from a kindergarten graduation ceremony. Good for you, Principal Hawkins. That's according to New York Daily News. One of the letters, according to the Daily News, starts out by saying, "You are a filthy, dirty, ugly, subhuman gorilla." You sons of bitches, you really are sick. Actually, she's a very, very attractive woman. I wish I'd had a principal like that. I would have paid attention in kindergarten. New York Post reports five classes at the elementary school spent months learning the patriotic song in anticipation of performing it at the ceremony, but Principal Hawkins canceled the performance at a recent rehearsal, saying that she didn't want to, quote, offend other cultures. More on this when we come back.
You are now entering the Flying Monkey Free Zone. It's Mike Malloy.
Past the hour. So Greta Hawkins, the principal at PS 90 in Brooklyn, decided the Lee Greenwood song, God Bless the USA, was not appropriate for a kindergarten graduation ceremony. Oh my God. And now she's getting emails from nice Caucasian Christian right-wingers. You can count on it. You are a filthy, dirty, ugly, subhuman gorilla, reads one of the letters, according to the New York Daily News. A spokesperson for the Department of Education, City of New York, told the New York Post that the song was scrapped from the performance because the lyrics were deemed inappropriate for kindergartners. Yeah, I would think so. Parents responded by telling CBS New York radio station that they believe the patriotic tune should be allowed. Now, what Ms. Hawkins decided to do was to substitute the jingoistic warmongering song God Bless the USA with a Justin Bieber song, Baby. Despite the outrage from the really patriotic Americans who wanted their kindergartners to hear God Bless the USA, despite that outrage, the school chancellor for that district told CBS New York that he stands behind Hawkins' decision. Well, I would think so. I mean, what five-year-old is going, oh, never mind. God. What else we got here? Stuff just piles up, doesn't it? Oh, yeah. This comes via Lee. It comes from Lee in New York City via Crooks and Liars. Honeywell CEO David Cote, C-O-T-E, Cote or Cote, the CEO of Honeywell, made news recently by calling for corporations to pay zero taxes in the United States, corporate income tax, nothing. And that's something that he claimed would boost the creation of jobs. Now, of course, Honeywell is one of Barack Obama's favorite corporations. It is. However, Honeywell has paid an effective tax rate of 2% in the last 4 years and cut 1,000 jobs in the United States during that time. Now, CEO David Cote argued that if corporations paid no taxes, they would reinvest that money in creating jobs. An oft-repeated conservative and libertarian claim that is rejected by almost all available evidence. But never mind facts and truth. We're talking right-wing neo-fascist corporatism here. You know, truth be damned. Take Honeywell. It's a profitable company. It made earnings of $825 million in 2011, an increase over the $708 million it made in 2010, and saw a related increase in the value of its shares, where profits on the shares from 1 year to the next year were nearly a buck. During the last 4 years, Honeywell's effective tax rate was 2.0%, and that was only because it paid taxes in 2011. From 2008 to 2010, Honeywell paid an effective tax rate of -0.7%. And in the last 2 years, Honeywell cut 1,000 jobs in the U.S. while adding 11,000 jobs abroad. Light bulb going off, you dumbass right-wingers? No, of course not. Of course not. So despite paying basically no taxes in the U.S. in recent years, Honeywell continues to ship jobs overseas. Makes you question the no taxes for corporations providing American jobs. Doesn't it? I guess if you're sane, it does. If you're a right-winger, if you're a conservative, you just sit there and continue to pick boogers and say, well, what's he talking about now? What's this dumbass liberal talking about now? What's he talking about? Corporate taxes? Yeah. Dribble, drool. Freaks. So there you have it. Honeywell, whose CEO says, we don't want to pay no stinking taxes. We will use the money to invest in the United States. Proves himself to be a complete liar. But as I've said on this program many, many, many times in the past, every single Republican is a liar. Every single Republican voter is a liar and a fool and a little greed head who thinks eventually he or she is going to get some of this money. No, you're not. Idiot. It goes to people like, well, the head of Honeywell. You know what I'm saying?
truth seekers, it's time for your humble and obedient servant, Mike Malloy.
No, 25 before the hour. Hello! So, last week, I was telling you about, not last week, but the week before, because last week this was Brad Friedman's program, but the week before, about North Carolina, which has the Outer Banks, Kitty Hawk, Wright Brothers, beaches, you know, very fragile Outer Banks. And that North Carolina, the Republicans in the North Carolina legislature had decided to ban certain terms like beach erosion and global warming. You know, come up with different words, you're not going to use those. This is how sick these right-wing sons of bitches are. Well, now it's Virginia's turn. The Virginia House of Delegates delegate, that's like House of Representatives, you understand. Virginia, though, is a commonwealth. Anyway, this guy, Christopher Stoll, he's a Republican. As Raw Story reports, he might be a right-wing fringe nut job when it comes to climate science, but at least he's helping fellow lawmakers in Virginia temper the Tea Party's reaction to costly government studies on climate change. Now, get this. In a legislative dust-up earlier this year, according to the Virginia Pilot newspaper, Mr. Stoll, the Republican, told Virginia State Senator Ralph Northam, a Democrat, that the terms climate change and sea level rise are, quote, liberal code words. You sons of bitches. That must be excised from a study request or risk having that request shelved. Do you get that? Some money was going to be appropriate because Virginia has, you know, it has a coastline. Tidewater, Virginia. Chesapeake Bay. No, that's Maryland. Well, partly Virginia, isn't it? I don't know. Anyway. They have the whole Hampton Roads area. It's just estuaries, and it used to be. The James River flows into, it's Chesapeake Bay. And it's a very watery state once you get east of the fall line. And also very vulnerable to climate change. There are a lot of cities in the Tidewater area, Hampton, Norfolk, what else? Salem? Is Salem, Mass? Salem, Virginia? No, I don't know. Anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah, the Republican who says he wants the words climate change and sea level rise, which are, to him, liberal code words, taken out of the authorization for a study on those topics. You know, call it pea soup or chicken feet, but don't call it what it is, sea level rise and climate change. Change, you know, I mean, this is just so Orwellian. It's almost laughable. It's almost parody upon parody. What these right-wing doofuses do. You know, if we change the words, it'll become chicken feet or pea soup. It won't be sea level rise or climate change. We'll make it chicken feet. I mean, the stupidity is just monumental, isn't it? Huh? Sure it is. Now, according to Raw Story, shockingly enough, even though Republicans control the state's General Assembly and hold the tie-breaking vote in the Virginia Senate, they voted to approve $138,000 to fund the study. Ooh, that's a lot of money. After the Democrat, Ralph Northam, allowed the term sea level rise to be swapped out for recurrent flooding. We don't have no stinking sea level rise. We have recurrent flooding. Jesus God. Now, while prior administrations in Virginia, namely that of Governor Tim Kaine, a Democrat, were quite proactive about studying climate change, the new freak, the Republican Bob McDonnell, the governor, said in public that he doesn't believe human activity is influencing the Earth's climate. Hell no! It's God! Or whatever he said. His administration also brought to an end a climate change commission that was authorized by Governor Kaine, the Democrat. And that commission had produced numerous reports on the threats posed to the state by sea level rise and warmer temperatures. But we don't want no stinking scientists. We're Republicans. We're conservative. We're right wingers. We don't believe any science. What is the science schmiance? What the hell are you talking about? We believe in industry. So, ever since Governor Kaine's Climate Change Commission was ripped to pieces by Governor McConnell, the Virginia Department of Environmental Quality has been pushed by the legislature to stop using scientific terms like climate change or sea level rise, swapping them for terms like coastal resilience and recurrent flooding. Now, the Republican Governor McDonald's Attorney General, this freak, Ken Cuccinelli, we've talked about him before, he also took off on a witch hunt for research errors at the University of Virginia by attempting to force the university president, Teresa Sullivan, to turn over scientist records and internal communications. Give me the papers! The state Supreme Court ultimately sided with Teresa Sullivan and told this guy to go pound sand up his ass. But she since announced plans, the president of the University of Virginia announced plans to resign due to what she calls a philosophical difference of opinion. How can you be the president of a university? University of Virginia, didn't Jefferson found that or attend it or like it or friend it or something, right? Huh? But there's too goddamn much science going on there, you see. We don't want no stinking science. Climate change? Sea level rise? Why, those are liberal buzzwords. They don't mean anything except, you know, to try to keep the Kenyan in the White House. You sick bastards. So the president of University of Virginia has said, adios, okay? You Republicans, you just sit here and wallow in your own excrement, but I think I'll leave. In a study released last week by the Nature Conservancy, identified Virginia as home to a number of vital, what they call life strongholds, that may be used as refuges if predictions of dramatically worsening climate event prove accurate. The Conservancy found that while Virginia may face some of the worst effects from sea level rise in the whole country, its forests, swamps, and mountains may one day provide a haven for humans and animals migrating away from coastal areas. Huh? There's more of that scientific crap. The Conservancy told the Associated Press, quote, "These strongholds will be critical to all life as the threats of climate change continue to grow. These strongholds could serve as breeding grounds and seed banks for many plants and animal species that otherwise might be unable to find suitable habitat due to climate change." End quote. But in the Commonwealth of Virginia, under the Republican right-wing freak bastards, we're not going to have any of this discussion about science. We're going to change the terms. Because, you know, climate change and sea level rise, why hell? Anybody knows those are liberal code words that must be taken out of the language. Let's use recurrent flooding and, what else could we use? Pig feet. Let's use that. No, pig, that's, you know, chicken feet. Okay. We are going to authorize a study on the effect of chicken feet on the coast of Virginia. And also on cloud formation. in the stratosphere. But it has nothing to do with climate change or sea level rise. It has to do with chicken feet. You stupid, stupid people. Is it time to move to the fourth box yet?
It's Mike Malloy. So many answers like you're stupid, like you're crooked, like you're lazy. Lazy. Hit me with your left, hit me with your right, hit me from the top to the toe. Even when you chew me up and spit me out, I still don't want to know.
It's about 10 before the hour. After the next break, we will take your phone call if you want to... get it set. 877-996-2556 is the numero telefono here. Did you hear about this? I have to drop this into the mix tonight. Spiders attack. An army of venomous spiders invaded a town in India, killing two people, and scientists still don't know much about the arachnids or where they came from. But apparently just clouds of these spiders invaded the town of Sadia during a Hindu festival.
Uh-oh.
Witnesses said these arachnids latched onto and bit anything that moved or breathed, according to the Times of India. Doctors are still trying to figure out what venom the spiders inject. But they do know that the spiders killed two people, a man and an unidentified boy, and many other people were injured. Apparently, extreme pain and nausea is the result of just a little bite. The spiders were very aggressive and came in waves, according to the Times of India. A spokesman from Dibrugarh University said not much is known about this menace. The spider leaps at anything that comes close. Some of the victims claimed the spider latched on to them after biting. If that is so, this needs to be dealt with carefully, this professor went on. The fangs of this critter are quite powerful. Now, according to a report, arachnid experts are trying to identify the species, and they haven't been able to yet. They're guessing maybe tarantulas, maybe black wishbones, or maybe funnel web spiders. And researchers are also still testing the toxicity of the venom. Oh, my goodness. Sounds like something out of Exodus, doesn't it? Spider attack during a Hindu festival. Oh, my goodness. I have a problem with spiders. Only if I get bit. Otherwise, you know, I like them. They're great. They catch irritating little bastards like mosquitoes and flies and Republicans and apparently some Hindus. When was that, Kathy? About a year or so ago, I was sorting, not cutting, but I was sorting firewood that had been laying in our firewood area under the porch for quite some time. And, you know, you let chopped up wood lay around, you're going to get snakes, spiders, and all kinds of things start to make a home in there. And so I was sorting it, you know, trying to get the hardwoods away from the pine, and I felt like a little pinprick. I thought it was a mosquito or something. I didn't pay any attention to it. I looked on my wrist, and there was a little mark. And the dead giveaway was there were two little tiny, itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny little puncture wounds. Teeny, just, you know, like the sharp point of a pin. I didn't pay attention to it. I said, oh, okay. So when I got in the house, you know, I just poured some peroxide on it, forgot about it. The next I went to bed later on that night, next morning, woke up. Remember that? My whole arm from my elbow to my wrist was bright red and swollen about three times normal size. So, you know, I immediately jumped in the truck and headed for the nearest Walgreens to one of those minute clinics. I walked in, you know, I said, hey, I'll be a champion. And the PA or the nurse practitioner took a look at that and said, I want you to go to the nearest hospital emergency room. We can't treat that. So I did and wound up with, I had three IVs. Antibiotic. What else, Kathy? Antibiotic. Antihistamine. I forget what the third one was. And from that point on, you know, that's the first time I've ever been seriously spider bit. And I just give them a lot of room now. Now, you know, if I need to sort firewood, I'll kick at it first. Kick, 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 kick. Or take a metal bar and go whack, whack, whack on the wood just to see if anything goes crawling into the. And plus, we changed underneath the porch now. It's no longer dirt. Put in gravel. Huge tons of gravel. Next time, a flamethrower. Yeah, good idea, Greg. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, how about you want to call in and chat? I have a couple more things I want to drop in the mix here, but it can wait. The phone number is 877-996-2556. And if you're right winger, don't bother. I mean, you can continue to listen in the dark while you eat your boogers, but don't call. I don't like you. I don't want anything to do with you. All right? If you're a normal person, 877-996-2556. We'll be right back. 7 past the hour. This is the Mike Malloy program. Handled adroitly last week by Brad Friedman. Thank you, Brad, for filling in for a week. Appreciate it. Okay, I just want to share this with you, and then we're going to come to your phone calls. Pakistan is blaming the CIA for fresh polio cases in that country. This is from Asia Times. Apparently, Pakistan has been involved in efforts to contain polio. Yeah, it's still around in areas bordering Afghanistan. And these efforts have been set back following the conviction of a doctor there who allegedly ran a fake vaccine program in order to locate Osama bin Laden. You following me so far? This guy, Dr. Afridi, was sentenced to 30 years in prison a couple of weeks ago on charges of treason. He is said to have helped the CIA track down bin Laden. Remember this story? By collecting DNA samples from selected residents in the town of Abbottabad, where they finally found bin Laden and killed him. You know, that's the official story. Bin Laden was killed in May of 2011. Now, this doctor was arrested by Pakistani authorities 3 weeks later and charged with treason because he gave the location of Osama bin Laden. Doctors Without Borders, the international medical aid charity, had then warned that the CIA's alleged use of a vaccination program to cover, as cover to spy on bin Laden, threatened immunization work around the world. Dr. Afridi's role appears to have exacerbated suspicions among people in the tribal areas in Afghanistan and Pakistan that polio vaccinations are really part of U.S. conspiracy to make their children infertile. Ah. Another doctor, a polio officer in the tribal areas, said, quote, "The problem of refusing vaccination is not new, but Dr. Afridi's fake vaccination campaign has proved to be a setback to our efforts to popularize immunization," end quote. In the area that we're talking about, so far this year, there have been 22 cases of polio. So anyway, according to this the story, last week parents refused to allow vaccination in South Waziristan, saying they would prefer to have electricity, paved roads, and clean drinking water first. So apparently, our great allies, the Pakistanis, who are just itching to unleash a couple of nukes against India and, you know, Israel and, you know, maybe the United States, our great allies, the Pakistanis, now so pissed off that their deliberate hiding of Osama bin Laden, if you believe, you know, the real story, that their deliberate hiding of Osama bin Laden was thwarted by this Pakistani doctor. So they arrest him, charge him with treason, convict him, and sentence him to 30 years in prison. And then they put out the story that the so-called polio vaccine being used by, among others, Doctors Without Borders is really some kind of a chemical that will make the people in the tribal areas, their children, sterile. How many billions have we funneled into Pakistan? You know, you can't buy friends. I mean, come on. Or I shouldn't say friends. That sounds very trite. That sounds very 1950-ish. You can't buy global allies. You can only get them to pretend that they're assisting you in your attempt to dominate the world and keep your empire going, when in fact what they're doing is eating at the core of your empire by saying that you're providing vaccines that make children sterile. Jesus God. I don't know. It's just madness. Thank God for this program. The one island of sanity where we can, those of us who have the courage, can gather around this campfire every night and get away from this stuff. Right? Well, not get away from it because, you know, we talk about it, but kind of look at it from a distance. All right. Let's do some calls. Okay. There's Stephen in Burbank. Hey, Stephen.
Hi, Mike.
Hey.
I'm sure you remember Governor Schwarzenegger. He used to be an actor, and he played the part of the Terminator.
I think I do remember that guy, yeah.
Well, in one of those scenes where he roughs up some bikers, you know, steals one of their motorcycles, was filmed at Foothill in Osborne. And the only reason I know that is because I played that live country and western music bar myself.
Oh, yeah?
So what happened, Mike, as time went by, the corral got torn down, and Los Angeles City erected a public library on the spot. And on the route, I was driving around. I thought, I'll check this out. I went in. I looked all over the place for a plaque denoting the place where Rodney King got beaten to within an inch of his life.
Huh.
And guess what? I could not find a plaque. I'm not saying it's not there, but some kind of historical commemorative, you know, like, you know, like the Pueblos, you know, like Mission, you know, San Fernando, you know, this is the spot where Father Sarah did this, and this
right.
is where they did that. Nothing about Rodney King being beaten up at that spot at Foothill and Osborne.
You know, for the most part, white America likes to cover up its crimes, and I'm not being anti-Caucasian, I'm just stating an historical fact. White America covers up its crimes. How many commemorative plaques are there scattered around about the butchery of Native people, about the butchery of Black folks, in, whether it's in Wichita or Florida or Oklahoma City or wherever it is? White people don't put plaques out where they have committed massive crimes. Do you think?
Well, the power structure does not want the plebeian thinking about racism and police brutality.
Well, of course not.
Must be a reason.
Racism? I'm not a racist. Oh, you're not? No! Oh,
well,
okay.
I might be subconsciously and unconsciously, but I don't want to admit it.
Yeah.
I'm not.
Well, it's a difficult thing for Caucasians to admit. But, you know, I have maintained since I became conscious that if you are European American in this country, it is you're born here and grew up here, and you're over the age of say 40. I'll just pick a number at random. I don't think this is necessarily true so much of younger people. If you're over the age of 50, let's you know, stretch a little bit. You cannot be not a racist. Now, you can fight against it, you can transcend it, but racism was built into the fabric of the country. So, I mean, everywhere you turned. You know, I like to watch on Ted Turner's Classic Movie Network, I like to watch the movies, the film noir and some of the movies from the 50s and even the 60s. And Black people hadn't been invented yet. It was all white people. There were no such thing as Black people. You could look at crowd scenes like Madison Square Garden and Doris Day is running to meet Rock Hudson. And there are just thousands of people, but there are no Black people. it's just astonishing. So you cannot have been brought up in this country if you're over the age of 50 and you're Caucasian without having racism just put into the fiber of your being. It's up to you to overcome it, but it's still there.
Well, the nanny and her husband took me to Hanson Dam, where I learned how to swim when I was 7 years old.
Hey, hold on a second, Stephen. I got a break right now.
Freedom.
revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour, we're talking to Stephen in Burbank, California. All right, sorry to cut you off there. Where were we?
Okay, it's a recreational center called Hanson Dam, and where Rodney King got beaten is out in the northwestern corner. But at Hanson Dam, in my youth, I learned how to swim in Hanson Dam. And one day we went for a picnic, you know. My dad was pretty middle class, a little bit upper, elevator mechanic, good money in those days. And so he had these people from back east, you know, just whiter than snow. And we went to Hanson Dam for the picnic, and then a church group came in, you know, like, I don't know, 50, 100, 200 people, all African-American, and they set up the picnics, blankets around us and stuff. And I'd never seen, like so many people different than me, all in the same place and all at the same time. And I'm looking at them, and I'm thinking, wow, these people are different, you know. They wear clothes, they talk like us, they eat food and everything. But yet, you know, the babysitter said, come on, we got to get out of here, you know. And so we get back in the car and drive away. Oh, we can't hang around with these people. And there was also a Latino kid down the street, used to play with him all the time. And they said, oh, don't play with him. He's not an American.
Right.
You know? And
right.
So you know where I was, you know how I was raised, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And pulling out of that, and reflecting on it, I thought, gee whiz, it started me on the road to start questioning everything.
Oh, yeah, sure, absolutely. Well, that's the only way you get, that's the only way you get knowledge, question everything.
Yeah, well, I was hearing Cornel West today on KPFK recorded APR, and he was talking about the first step towards critical thinking is self-criticism. Examine your own life. He was talking a lot about Socrates, too.
That just sounds way, way too intellectual for me.
Well, it ain't really.
No, I'm just kidding.
You don't have to know how to spell Sean Fry.
That's true. All right, Stephen, thanks, man.
Okay, boss.
Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Yeah, I would, I'd be willing to accept a challenge from anyone who might feel that saying that if you're a Caucasian, you're over the age of 50, that you cannot not be racist in this country. And I don't think it's purely a subjective thing. When you grow up in a society, you know, well, let me back up. When I hear that term reverse racism, I got to laugh. I mean, there can be bigotry and prejudice on any side of the of any color line, but racism is pretty much a legal / sociological term. Americans grew up in a society, if you're over the age of 50, you grew up in a society like we all did, where black folk hadn't been invented. I mean, they were historically, they were in the books, you know, slaves, Middle Passage. Now let's move on. They were mentioned, depending on what region of the country you lived in. African Americans were mentioned in the context of the Civil War. If you lived in the South, barely mentioned. That was all about states' rights and, you know, those godless Yankees. If you lived up north, there was more emphasis on slavery as a precipitating factor for the Civil War. But again, I mean, take a look. You can go online and find old television shows or television commercials or television programs. And black people weren't invented where it concerns television until what? Late 60s? Oh, I know. Laugh-In had a couple of African-American actors. But I'm talking about just in a common context. Never, never did you see black folk represented in TV commercials. Oh, Lord, no. But the thing that gets me, you watch Turner Classic Movies, TCM. I don't know if you have it on your cable or satellite system, but I love that that channel because you get all these old, mostly black and white movies. But if you take a look at them, you can see, for example, like I mentioned, a scene in Grand Central Station or a troop train or people at a sporting event, you know, big crowds of people, just enormous crowds of people in the context of the film. And no black folk. No, not a single one. But you know what I really like are the old film of basketball games. You know, like the Boston Celtics and teams like that. And you see all these. I mean, it looks so strange to see all white guys running up and down the court. I mean, it's almost like what? What? What, white guys playing professional, what? Basketball? Ah! But, you know, eventually black folk were allowed to be invented where it concerns mass media. You know what I'm talking about. And then all of a sudden it was like, wait a minute. What are they doing? Do they actually smoke cigarettes? Do they actually eat Cheerios? Do they actually use, this spread or that spread, those people do that too? Oh, it was a shock. It was a shock to white folks to find out, oh my God, black people drank milk. Ah! Before the hour, I hope you understand what I'm saying about black folk did not exist, commercially speaking, television. Now, okay, you had Butterfly McQueen in 1938. You know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about. There were caricatures, sure. And then you had the I'm drawing a blank here. Star Trek, the black woman who was one of the officers. Who was that?
Nichelle Nichols.
But what was her character's name, Kenny?
Uhuru.
Isn't that the Swahili word for freedom?
I was something of a trekker. Yeah, I don't know what it was Swahili for, but it was Lieutenant Uhuru.
Uhuru.
And she was probably the first prime time lead African American on a television show. Certainly female. That was not like a maid.
Right.
Or, you know, I don't know, a maid.
or a maid. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, I was not a Trekkie. I was not a fan of... I love science fiction, but Star Trek, you know, I was just... I missed that whole first go-around of Star Trek completely. But anyway, the point...
You interviewed her.
Oh, I know. I had her on the program, right. But I guess the point I was trying to make is that... Sure, there were occasional sightings of African Americans in this country. Occasionally, you would see a black person on a TV show like Star Trek, or you'd see a black person in the background in a crowd scene in a movie from the 50s. Ah, Blackboard Jungle. Sidney Poitier was in Blackboard Jungle, right? So yeah, occasionally, and that was what, 55, 56, 57? Right. Yeah, granted, occasionally, but black folk were very exotic and very much not there. They hadn't been invented yet. They were just kind of popping up here and there. What's that? That's African American. What? It's African American. But you only had to be a certain kind. And I think that's one of the reasons that the teabaggers, especially these teabag freakoids, cannot handle a black president. Because, you know, Obama doesn't fit their racist stereotype. And I don't blame these people for being racist. I blame them for not struggling against it and get rid of it. I mean, when you're a child, you have no control over society at large. You have no control over the bigotry or racism of your own parents. But I just hate it when white folks start talking about reverse racism. There is no such thing. There's reverse nothing. I mean, people can be bigoted. People can be prejudiced. I don't care what your race is. You can be prejudiced and bigoted and kind of a prick about other people, about other racial groups, other nationalities, of course. But racism is an institutionalized system that lessens someone's humanity because of their race. And it can only be done by the dominant power, whatever the dominant power is. They're the ones that decide that X people cannot vote, or Y people cannot intermarry, or Z people cannot eat at a lunch counter. Those laws are not made by integrated legislative bodies. Come on. Every time I bring this up, you know, people go, well, I'm no racist. I'm not saying you're a racist by choice. But if you're over a certain age, you're a racist by osmosis. I mean, it's in you, white person. It's in you. You can't. I mean, come on. Come on. You don't have to be ashamed of that. What you should be ashamed of, though, is your refusal to get rid of it. Or if you'll never get rid of it. But, I mean, struggle against it. Stop letting it manifest. Don't caricature the president of the United States and his wife with this kind of filth, this kind of racist filth. Stop it. Yeah, like they're going to listen to me. If you want to challenge him as we do on this program because of his policies, then challenge him. But quit being such a little thumb-sucking baby racist punk. You know, with your little outhouse that says Obama Library. That is so revealing of your rotten soul. It's so revealing of your refusal to become an adult, to try to transcend the damage done to your mind. I mean, it's you're not saying anything about Obama, but you're speaking volumes about yourself, fool. I'm sorry, just going on and on. Okay, Tom is in Bullhead City, Arizona. Hey, Tom.
Yeah, hi. What concerns me tonight is that I believe that the Obamacare is going to be overturned in the Supreme Court here in the next couple of weeks.
You think?
And yeah, and 5-4, and that the Mitt Romney, the fix is in. And you know, I'm not ready to sit here. I've been following you for like 5 years now, and I've been calling in. You know, I kind of follow the twisties and turnies with you, and I just want to know where your head's at on this. And I have an answer, and I want to see if we come up with the same conclusion. But where are we going to? I don't want to set my hair on fire and run down the street naked when Mitt Romney gets elected president. Okay?
Yeah.
That's not me. Okay?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Actually, I could. I mean, you know, if you really knew me, I'm kind of crazy. Uh-huh. I want a better answer. I want something. But I'm going to see what you have. I have an answer, but I'm going to listen to you.
Of what? What's the question?
What are we going to do when Mitt Romney gets elected president and the Supreme Court overturns Obamacare? What are we going to do? What is the next plan of action?
For the average American, nothing.
That's not good.
Well, no.
I have a plan, though.
Well, no, it's not good, but it'll be nothing. And what it's going to take to get people to finally wake up or get politically involved in this country is to feel the lash I mean, you can't, you know, just right. because a Republican or a Democrat is elected president, right. that doesn't do anything. When you feel the lash on your back, when you start, when you start to see that you can't get, health care or education for your aging parents or your sick spouse or your kids,
right.
when you find out that food prices are skyrocketing beyond your ability to buy it, when you realize that if you want to take your kids to what used to be a public park or a federally, protected, forest, you're going to have to pay because it's now owned by Forest Park or whatever the hell they decide to call it. What?
I have a solution, though.
Yeah, what's
that? How about if you ask everybody on the grassroots level, how about if you ask these people, I've got 100% response on this one. Do you feel that the government is so corrupt that it does not represent you? And I have got 100% response on this answer. Every one of them, I mean, and so, you know, okay, so what is, so on a grassroots level, okay, then what do we do about it? Oh, liberals, conservatives, blah, 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 you know, I mean, stuff, you know, I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, you know, I always, I have to take issue with the idea that government is bad. Government is not bad.
What's bad
is the fact that government has been, sold off by by the American public to the capitalists. So, and anything a corporatist touches with his or her rotten, filthy hands turns out to be bad. It's not government the way it's set up. I mean, how in the hell are you going to run a country of 330 million people unless you have government?
Yeah, but these people say, right back to you when you ask them that, they say, well, vote them out. Well, damn, Mike, we've been voting them for years, okay? And that's not working.
Well,
how about if we set up a new system of government? I mean, I'm serious. I'm serious. I'm thinking about it.
Well,
what do you think?
Well, I'm all for it, Tom. Send me your ideas. You've heard mine on this program. I got to leave there. Thanks, Tom. Yeah, of course the system doesn't work. The system doesn't work because it has, first of all, it's been corporatized. I mean, TV commercials now, filthy, hate-filled, monstrously untrue TV commercials are what influence people. You know, we've talked about this before. The whole ad agency in this country was set up by people who had studied what Goebbels and Himmler and the Nazi propagandists did to the German people. And you know, learning lessons on how to absolutely brainwash people on a remote basis and make them desire. The capitalism had to create desire for products that are asinine, ridiculous. 46 different kinds of laundry soap? Give me a goddamn break here. But that's where we are. See, it's got us corrupted. Why do you use Tide? Well, it's the best there is. Well, no, this other one. What's another one, Kathy? All. That's a better one. No, I like this brand. Why do you like that? Well, because you know, come on. So the system, of course the system is gone. It's totally gone. We still have the skeleton, we still have the Constitution and this and that and blah blah blah. But the system itself is a wholly owned subsidiary now of corporate America. You want to change it? Open the fourth box.
Cause he left the neighborhood like a rattlesnake shedding his skin. Well, they search the rooms, they check out the groups, and then they photograph the scene. I mean, individual stranded in a limousine.
Georgia, listening online. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Mike.
Hey.
Glad you're back.
Thank you very much.
This is going to seem like it doesn't relate to what we usually talk about, but it will. is Roger Clemens was acquitted today on his perjury trial.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and if you noticed, he was up to 30 years in jail for lying about taking steroids.
Right.
And there's George Bush lying us into a war, millions of people dying, and the economy going to hell.
I know, it's madness.
Right.
What about the John Edwards trial? I mean, yeah, he's a schmuck and a liar and a cheat. But to put him on trial for being a schmuck, a liar, and a cheat? Come on.
Right, and then you have Jamie Dimon up there talking before the representatives, lying about how he lost all this money.
Right.
Neither one of these people are brought up on trial for great crimes. And here you go, a guy who may or may not have taken steroids in a baseball game that no one will remember 20 years from now. And that's, you're willing to put this man in jail for lying about taking steroids in a baseball game.
Well, think about the cost. 9 weeks, I think it was a 9-week trial, one day for the jury to say, get out of town.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, good God.
Anybody who doesn't think this country is going insane just has to look at that.
Boy, you got that right, Paul.
Thanks, and have a good night.
All right, thank you, sir. Appreciate it. That is so true. I mean, well, I can't expand on what Paul said. He's absolutely right. Well, all right, let me share this email with you I got. Paul wrote it. I don't think it's Paul from Canton that we just talked to. I think this Paul. Well, I'll read it to you. Mike, if I were 23 or 25, I would be extremely disappointed with the results from Wisconsin, you know, the recall. If I were 23 or 25, I would also realize that it is time to make the necessary move to leave this country, mainly because at that age, you're not locked into a situation that cannot be undone. Or at that age, still be a viable individual wherever you may decide to go. There are ways that this can be done without too much difficulty. Unfortunately, I'm in my 60s, and that does not seem to be an option anymore. At an advanced age, one likes to occasionally reflect on what one has done or accomplished over a period of time, and usually some moderate satisfaction can be realized in doing this. I am unsure about others in my group, but as for myself, I feel that at this period of my life, I have been used, lied to, and been a part of the most deceptive government in modern time. Of course, there have been some brutal regimes, that is fact. However, none has used a population like the so-called United States of America. These brutal governments have always been defined as being so. However, these governments are punks compared to the manipulative system that is now in place in this country and is in place solely to acquire as much money, power, and perversion that they can live with. Of course, this was not an easy thing to do. It did cost hundreds of thousands of lives. As an older person, I now reflect back to when the brainwashing began. It seems as though it started back in the second grade, with the cavalry always defeating the Indians. That, however, seemed to be a different category than the mind-bending that is happening now. I reflect back to when I was in the Army in the 60s, carrying a weapon, knowing how to use it, ready to do what they wanted me to do. Fortunately, the situation never arose. Has that changed over time? Not really. It's just that corporations are now determining where the wars will be fought, and they are ensuring that working class people will continue to remain economically depressed, so they will continue supplying fit young men and women to the now corporate military. Fighter planes flying over the Super Bowl. Another way for corporate businessmen to endear themselves to the general public. If the military is in presence, then it has to be too American to not be a good thing. Have any NFL owners or executives ever been in the military? Of course not. Just another way to work on the heads of the average person. Their absolution to staging these farcical multi-million dollar events is to interview the troops in Iraq or Afghanistan and to show that they are in complete agreement with their money-grubbing extravaganzas. The same roundabout tactics have managed to get people in Wisconsin to vote against their own well-being. This is the way it is, and there would be no chance unless extreme poverty and despair increase to a point where it is no longer tolerable and all concerned have nothing to lose. I wonder if the cowards firing these drones from the council and taking out some goat herder kiss their wives goodbye in the morning, or their husbands. They return home in time to take the little kid to a Little League baseball game. I would be anxious to know what the combat ribbon for that looks like. As for myself, I'm not exactly a bedridden person, so playing hockey one night a week and on occasion delivering vessels to the Western Pacific as a ship's officer, I no longer consider myself part of the American scene, but am of the opinion that I am living in a geographical space in which I agree and respect about 45% of the population. There will be no flags when I take final departure, and hopefully my remains, or whatever you call it, will be cast over some ocean and not the soil of the United States. That would be an acknowledgement of a government I will not allow. Sorry to bend your ear, Mike, but sometimes an old guy has to say something to someone. Signed, Paul. Yes, indeed. I hear you loud and clear, Paul. That's it for tonight, folks. We are flat out of time. Thanks for hanging out around the campfire tonight. We do appreciate it. And barring some celestial event, I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy.